Blog Talk Radio.
All right, everybody. Welcome to Truth Emerges Radio. Welcome to Unraveling the Matrix. Today is my special Memorial Day weekend show. I'm going to discuss the insane psychology of war. We're going to get into it. We're going to get into war, warfare, psychology, nationalism, patriotism, military-industrial complex, propaganda, the groupthink, brainwashing techniques, conformity, order followers, the chain of command, collectivism, compliance, the media, covert operations, national security, the war on terror, the shadow government, the involvement of the banking cabal. We're going to talk a little bit about flagotry, symbolism, the herd mentality, talk about the pawns in the game, and indoctrination. If you want to participate, there's open lines today, 347-855-8301. Press 1 to participate. Lets me know you're in the queue. You want to participate. Again, that number is 347-855-8301. I see my friend John McGuire. He's already hot and live to play the intro, and we're going to get into the insane psychology of war.
There's something wrong. You don't know what it is, but it's there, like a splinter in your mind. You have to see it for yourself. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth. Like a splinter in your mind. Tumbling down the rabbit hole. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. Like a splinter in your mind. A splinter in your mind. All I'm offering is the truth.
All I offer is the truth, and we're going to be laying down the truth. John, it shows that you're here in the queue and you're hot. Are you here?
I'm here, and that makes two of us. That's all I offer.
Excellent.
Too. Doesn't always get the best reception, I have to tell you.
I think I'm going to ruffle a few feathers today about the insane psychology of war on Memorial Day weekend.
I renamed that page. I want to tell you this, and I didn't do it for anyone in particular. I just thought that maybe it came on too strong. That page that got me blocked, the page entitled like Mace to a Bible Troll, I was doing that out of empathy for people who deal with, overbearing evangelization. And somebody, I'll just give the code name the First Lady, didn't take that too well and really didn't give me any rebuttal for it, just sort of passive-aggressive road. But, you know, I renamed it since then, just a couple days ago, actually. I decided to call it Please Bible Responsibly. So, I'm making an effort, build a bridge here, but, and I don't take anything personal. Try not to take, well, I lied. Okay, I did take it a little. But, you know, I'm trying to make this work.
Right. Yeah. I ruffled a few feathers. I posted a meme in this partisan exchange group and had this one Marine, this jarhead, is telling me that this shows the hypocrisy and the indoctrination and the mentality of this chain of command and compliance. He's telling me that he's going to kill me, and that he would show me you know, that these Marines fought for these freedoms that apparently he didn't like my freedom of expression. So, I mean, the total hypocrisy there, because I'm not a little flag at Jarhead that he's going to kill me. I mean, I made a video about...
If you fight for their freedom, then that gives you the privilege, I guess, to decide which freedoms they get. See, that's so convenient, isn't it?
Right, exactly. And I guess he didn't like that. He didn't like the post where I put a kid that's crying and some guy's handing him a folded flag. Let me read the meme. I mean, it's in the show promo. It was like. And when I posted it around. I asked if it was too harsh, and apparently, you know, some people came in and that I didn't know what I was talking about. And the meme, it shows a little boy crying and a soldier handing him a folded up flag that was draped over his dad's coffin. He says, "You're going to grow up without your daddy because he didn't understand that he was an expendable pawn in a global war for resources. Here, have a piece of cloth."
Mm-hmm.
I put a powerful picture. I mean, it's kind of war. It's kind of a genocide thing. It shows a little kid in Rwanda covering his face from the stench of bodies that are strewn about from this wonderful thing that we call war.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, and I just want to put this out for the listeners and tell you too, just because I'm anti-war does not mean that I'm a pacifist by any means. I mean, if you threaten me or my loved ones or my property, expect repercussions because they're coming.
So it's kind of like you shouldn't go out shooting people for no reason, and maybe in the same way you shouldn't just start wars for no reason. Is that kind of what you're driving at?
Well, yeah, exactly. And it's a Howard Zinn. I mean, I don't agree with everything that he said, but he made a quote, too, and I posted the meme. It's got a bunch of dead kids from war. These were actually Palestinian kids laid out in Gaza. And he stated, "There is no flag large enough to cover the shame of killing innocent people."
Nope.
Then I posted another picture that no one wraps their mind around. It shows a soldier in Afghanistan with a dead Afghanistan kid. I mean, this kid can't be any older than 8 or 9 years old, and he's holding his head up and he's smiling for the picture like he just went on a trophy hunt. Then I posted about the graphic. The kill team. These were soldiers. I'm going to use that term loosely, protecting our freedoms in Iraq. That went out and hunted and killed civilians for sport. This is what we've come to in society. And there's actually people that make excuses for these demented sick people. And that's what really, really, really gets me, my blood boiling.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't see the logic, you know, of us being halfway around the world killing people, mainly women and children, in Afghanistan and Iraq. For our freedoms.
Israelis
to save
are
our
such
freedoms.
A bad example. The Israelis set such a bad example, and that's no excuse, but it's a fact. I mean, they really have upped the ante. I mean, you constantly read stories how they're baiting, you know, they're mocking, they're making all kinds of, insults to these adolescent Palestinian boys, and, you know, they just bait them and kill them.
Yeah, they bait them, and as soon as they respond, they taunt them, and call them names, and what are you going to do about it, and this and that. And I mean, these people in Gaza, I mean, these kids are picking up rocks, and they're throwing rocks at tanks and throwing rocks at these soldiers, and these soldiers just kill them for sport. And I posted that. I've got a video of that in the show promo. I posted about the psychology of war, Brzezinski, and how we hooked up with created Al Qaeda from the Mujahideen to fight the Soviets. I got some rough war footage. And then I posted a link on General Petraeus, who actually admitted that we can't pull out of Afghanistan because there's trillions of dollars of resources there. And we have to find a way to commandeer it out of the country.
Wow.
I mean, these are things out of his mouth. And just like the war on terror, I mean, I post this all the time, and I get no logical response. Actually, Hillary Clinton, when she was Secretary of State in a Senate hearing, actually admitting that we created Al Qaeda.
Mm-hmm.
We create these boogeymen, and it's all to keep this petrodollar thing going. It's all to aid the military-industrial complex. I don't believe there's been a war since maybe World War II, and that's a big stretch of maybe, that we actually fought to preserve freedom.
Well, World War II was even controversial, you realize.
Right, that's what I'm saying, maybe.
Yeah,
and talking about the psychology of war, I love this Hermann Göring quote. This is during the Nuremberg trials. This is Göring. He said, "Naturally, the common people don't want war, neither in Russia, nor in England, nor in America, nor for that matter in Germany. This is understood. But the people can always be brought to the bidding of the leaders. That is easy. All you have to do is tell them they are being attacked and denounce the pacifists for lack of patriotism and exposing the country to danger. It works the same way in every country." And it really does.
Let's hate America if you are not okay with killing. Yeah.
Well, it's true.
Cold-blooded it is. I just saw this. Did you see, I'm sorry, it's a little unrelated, but it just blew my head off. Obama on Jimmy Kimmel Live admitting about extraterrestrials. He admitted it. He didn't say it outright, but he did admit it, because what he said was that, Jimmy Kimmel said, well, I was interviewing, and he had just been interviewing Bill Clinton a couple weeks earlier, and he said, and Bill Clinton said that there's nothing to it, there's nothing to see. And all Obama said was, yeah, that's what they tell us to say.
Oh, jeez. I'm not buying the little gray guys and all this. I mean, personally, I don't believe in it. But, I mean, this just goes to show you the indoctrination and the psyops that are in place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, This goes back to Reagan and the Star Wars thing that he brought up, you know, the Star Wars defense system. He actually made a speech in the UN and asked, and said, well, if there was an alien invasion, everybody would rally together to fight it off. I'm paraphrasing. That's not an exact quote.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
It could be just a way of rallying. It could also be a way of trying to teach people nonviolence. I mean, you could take this in any direction. I've heard people discuss the extraterrestrial, the possibilities on society, the possible effects on society, and they could go in any which direction. So I really think the jury's out on the consequences of that. You have a big group like the Raelians. They're a huge group. They firmly believe in aliens. They have these, they call them embassies that they establish all over the world. So, I don't know what it's all about, UFO cults. They're alive and well, I guess.
Right. Well, I don't want to get into, you know, aliens, yes or no. I really want to, you know, break this down and what's in play in current events and this war and warfare and this psychology, psychology of this nationalism and patriotism. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I just use that example of this Marine that wanted to kill me because I posted a meme. Right.
Yes.
He wants to inflict physical harm and kill me because I posted a meme. That
mm-hmm.
hurt his feels.
Yeah, it hurt his feels.
Well, what it actually did, it actually confirmed his confirmation bias, and it confirmed his cognitive dissonance.
Believe it or not, I once had an army general credibly threatened to kill me, like with his hands around my neck. I'm not even kidding. He was my boss, and he tried to deny it, or he tried to play it off later as being some sort of a euphemism. That was cute.
Right. Right, yeah, just like I've had debates with statists, you know, when I post these politicians and so-called world leaders talking about the New World Order, they just tell me it's a euphemism.
Well, in some ways it is. I mean, there's that side. Anything that's a big cultural idea, you got to realize there is that side to it. There is the side that is just the effect of the idea on the populace, right? And then there's the actual institution. But I do think there is an institution. I think it's a
right.
It's an idea among people who aren't part of it, and it's an idea among people who very much are part of it. I mean, there are such things as there have been organizations. It's interesting. I love this part of history where, like, there have been actual organizations that have been purely speculative. In other words, we don't even know if they existed or not, such as, for example, the Rosicrucians, who were hugely influential, and all this New Age stuff has really just recycled Rosicrucian, I don't want to say propaganda, a better word would be, like, I don't even want to say rhetoric, but that's closer. Like, just the New Age spiel, basically, that, oh, we're moving into this age where we don't need... And it's lovely. People love it. People who are sick of over-institutionalized, which is what we've got, sort of society, they love this stuff because they think, yeah, I'm more evolved than this. Maybe what they don't realize is we've always been more evolved than this. We've always been better than this. This has been imposed by these monsters, And it's not the Peter principle, but the Dilbert principle, where, like, the worst people rise to the top, right? So the scum rises
right.
to the top. That's the problem. The more organized we become, the less – it just gives humanity a bad name. They know, and that's why I believe in anarchy, in summary.
Right. And you know – anarchy and, you know, self-ownership, I mean, self-governance, and no, I mean, really, anarchy is derived from anarchus, means no rulers. Technically, you rule yourself, so there is a ruler. I mean, if you want to split hairs and look at it, I mean, you have to rule yourself.
That's It's even in these patriotic songs about self-control, you know? So if I'm controlling myself, then no one's controlling me. That's logic, right? Confirm thy soul in self-control, you know? So,
right.
Hey, let's... What if we just played that up and got rid of the government part?
Right. And that brings me into social psychology and this nationalism, which is an ideology, really, that holds that a nation is the fundamental unit for human social life and takes precedence over any other social and political principles. Nationalism makes certain political claims based upon this belief. Above all, the claim that the nation is the only legitimate basis for the state, that each nation is entitled to its own state, and that the borders of the state should be congruent with the borders of the nation. Nationalism refers to both a political doctrine and any collective action by political and social movements on behalf of specific nations. Nationalism has had an enormous influence upon world history since the nation-state has become the dominant form of state organization. Most of the world's population now lives in states which are at least nominally nation-states. Historians also use the term nationalism to refer to this historical transition and to the emergence of nationalist ideology and movements. Well, you notice even when Wikia describes the ideology of nationalism, they tie it to the state. I mean, they are fundamentally one and the same. Statism and nationalism are pretty much interchangeable.
Well, here's the difference. No, actually, I do want to correct you on this because I think it's important, and most people today have forgotten, especially in America, the term nation. What they don't want to tell you is nation does not mean state. What the word nation means is basically race. Nationalism is fundamentally racism, and that's exactly what we're seeing in Israel, okay? Hyper-nationalism, hyper-racism, okay? That's why the program is all about eugenics, not to mention apartheid. That's what it is. So nationalism is a statism, but primarily it's a statism. It says the states ought to be, like it says, congruent with the nations. Nation means a race or an ethnicity. And they don't mention that because they don't want you to put two and two together to realize that, oh, my God, this is racism under a different name. So that's what I would add.
Oh, that's a great point. I thank you for bringing that up. I never really thought of it in that state. But the problem is if you have nationalism, in the United States, you have a melting pot of a bunch of different races.
We do. That's why nationalism, most of the time, is referred to as white nationalism, because the ideology is that somehow or other, supposedly everyone of lighter skin is somehow the same ethnicity, which is completely absurd. I mean, again, just
right.
Like we were talking about, once you try to define government, you automatically get to really ugly truths, that the fact that it's all based on evil and lies. The same would happen probably, or something similar, when you try to define a nation, you start falling apart right away. Because once you try to define, for example, I love culture. I love studying cultures. I've spent quality time in Mexico and in Brazil. And it's beautiful to see different peoples, you know, forget about the institutional side or the government side, to see different peoples living their lives in different ways with different methods and different cooking and all these different things, okay? So, but once you start trying to define a nation, which is to say, again, an ethnic denotation, I think, once you start trying to define that, you're robbing it of its soul immediately. And that's exactly the problem with nationalism. That's exactly the problem with what Hitler did. Even though he's seen as this great hero, he also stole the soul of Germany in the name of saving Germany somehow. Okay, Because once you politicize that which cannot even be articulated or defined, which is the soul of a culture, once you turn that into politics, you're automatically destroying it. And that's why I hate nationalism with all my being. And I have good friends that think it's great, but I despise it.
Right. Well, you are right. As I went down and reading further, nationalists define individual nations on the basis of certain criteria which distinguish one nation from another and determine who is a member of each nation. These criteria typically include a shared language, culture, and or shared values, which are predominantly represented within a specific ethnic group.
Exactly. So it's not,
so,
the basis
so,
of it is not institutional. The basis of it is something much harder to define, right? It's something, it's a cultural concept. And, of course, they brought in race theory, too. So then they based it on physical attributes, which is even more insane in my book.
Right.
I don't even know what I don't have anything good to say about it.
Well, I mean, for the listeners out there, I mean, the reason we're discussing nationalism, because this all ties into the psychology, the insane psychology of war. I mean, to protect your ethnic group, to protect
mm-hmm.
your language or culture or shared values, that it's a total oxymoron. I mean,
it isn't civilized, because when we think of civilization, you think of a cosmopolitan kind of, you know, city life with a bunch of different people, like London, for example, now where you have a bunch of different people and they're getting along pretty well, and they just elected an Arab mayor, and it's like pretty much totally cool. Well, I mean, obviously not with everyone, but my point is,
right.
is that London is a very diverse and diverse for real, not diverse the way, like, I don't know, San Francisco is with all these little ghettos, but like truly integrated and assimilated, and it's fascinating, and it's wonderful, and that's what being civilized means. Nationalism, on the other hand, is kind of an appeal to tribalism, is what it really is. And again, I'm using words that we've made into dirty words to describe something that we're supposed to think is so great, and yet it's the exact same frickin' thing. And I'm not condemning tribalism. I mean, I think tribalism would be better than nationalism because it's more organic. But still, that's basically what it amounts to, is tribalism with sort of this institutional monkey on its back. Yeah.
Well, true, and if you look into nationalism and patriotism, I mean, these are words that interchanged, and they're very similar in definition, because patriotism is actually an emotional attachment to a nation, which an individual recognizes as their, I'm gonna put this in parentheses, homeland. Because you came out of your mother's vagina on a geographical place on the planet, it's your homeland.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I believe
let's see here.
I don't despise people who see like the earth as sacred. Like I think frankly a lot of the roots of Christianity come from that, even though they've denied that. And so I think that's valid, but to view the earth as sacred. But yeah, I don't think you can ever, you know, you got to get the ego out of there, the ego which wants to, and obviously I'm getting into more, you know, platonic spiritual terms, but, you know, that's just my personal journey. But I mean, you know, basically, yeah, I mean, the land is sacred, but like, you know, I mean, if we want to be bound to that, we're kind of binding our souls. And that's what I think ideology always does, is it, like nationalism, like I was saying, it sells the soul of the thing in exchange for worldly power. And I just say, not me, not now. You know, anyone else can do that, but I just say, that is definitely not for me. I can say unilaterally.
Well, it's not for me either. I mean, I'm just putting these things out there because they all tie into this psychology of war. And the psychology to get the groupthink or the collective to think that...
Exactly. I think it wouldn't be possible without this. That was very crucial in all these uprisings, some just, some less just, you know. I mean, I love learning about... I'll be honest. I really enjoyed when PBS came out with that Irish Easter Rising back 100 years ago. They did a three-parter on that, and I just ate it up because it was so cool that people who've been under England for so long were able to say enough's enough and really put their heart and soul into this, and part of it was beautiful. So, I mean, there are parts of, my goodness, I'm sure even part of the German Volk movement had a beauty to it. I do not doubt that, but when it becomes political, that's when I just step down and say no. You know, when it becomes the Nazi Party, that's when I say no. You know.
Well, see what happens is these concepts, these constructs are created by governments, and they're used by governments as a pretext for a collective bonding or a herd mentality to sway public opinion and
mm-hmm.
to basically form social conditioning. I mean, you know, it's like I posted the Joe Rogan, you know, the rah, 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 you know, let's, you know, America's the greatest and, you know, let's go shoot some other people and we're going to kick everybody's ass. You know what I'm saying? I mean, And
yep.
people rally around this patriotism and this nationalism, and it is fundamentally flawed. It's a sick groupthink, and I am no fan of collectivism. If you want to be a collectivist and you want to be a cult and you want to be part of the cult of government or you want to join some cult, hey, that's your prerogative. But when you try to instill or pull me into these values, then I have a problem with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole problem with status and this statism, which is, you know, is a belief in a central authority, you know, to govern society and to govern the economics of a society. I mean, it's...
People have this fake value, which is unity. We must be united. What's the saying of the live united, the united way, right? United way. We must be united. And growing up Catholic, I heard that more than I care to remember. And it was just like, that's, yeah, what is that? I don't even buy that. I think unity is often a pretext, just what you're saying. It plays right into the slave mentality and the herd mentality. And it doesn't really the kind of unity that's forced, the external kind of unity, isn't real unity. The kind of unity that I think is real is Zen. I think that's, you know, becoming one with all that is and all beings. That's unity. Political unity is destruction. And we need to learn the difference
in
America, because I think a lot of Americans are really interested in Buddhist philosophy because we're looking for something deeper. Don't get shortchanged by the government version of it. That's what I would say.
Right. And there is nothing wrong with looking to yourself first. And this is so frowned upon on this nationalistic or patriotism or this nationalism. It's all this collective thing. I mean, you know, there is nothing wrong with putting yourself first. There is nothing wrong with that at all. And I mean, I know your feelings. You're not the biggest Ayn Rand fan, but
she wrote against. What I would say is we all do put ourselves first, whether we admit it or not. So it's better to admit it. and just accept that that's a fact. I say don't trust anyone. People say, well, you got to trust someone, and I say, well, I trust everyone to act in their self-interest, because that's sanity. That's just the only
right.
the only way to understand humanity. So.
I mean, a lot of people, you know, when we talk about anarchist principles and voluntarism, I mean, the statist, first thing he says is, well, you just trust everybody.
Uh-huh.
I mean, no, I don't trust everybody. I don't even trust myself sometimes.
See, democracy is trusting everybody.
Basically, that's what democracy is. I mean, you're trusting the majority to dictate society for the common good and the social contract, you know, which I love. I found this meme, a vague notion to which no one has explicitly agreed, but that supposedly authorizes a certain class of people to steal, imprison, and kill in order to benefit the greater good, however they define it.
To benefit the greater good. Translation, to keep the slaves in check.
Exactly. Have you ever argued with someone about, well, I am so anti-war, and they say, well, you have to look at the bigger picture, or you have to look at the greater good, or it's to protect our freedom and liberty.
I don't spend a lot of time with these mouthpieces, so I don't get much of that. I just talk to people who are kind of loose and not just shills, basically. So, but yeah, I'm sure you would hear
well,
that a lot.
I deal with a big cross section, and I mean, again, this nationalism. Nationalism is all it really is a collectivist pride.
Mm-hmm.
And if you really think about it, patriotism and nationalism are so intertwined. It all boils down to you being part of a group or a collective because where you were born, where you came out of your mom's vagina. And a geographical boundary on the planet Earth.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say that, and I know someone who would disagree with me, this good friend I mentioned, he's a good friend except for the fact that he's a nationalist. I would say, he pointed out, and I think he was right. He pointed out that the Bible, well, the Old Testament specifically. Is really a nationalist document. In other words, theology is basically anthropology writ large, right? They say God is man writ large. In many senses, that's true, the way we think about it. So the religion in ancient times especially was largely a tool of nationalism. I mean, I got to tell you, it wasn't that me and Jesus, that's really, the Gnostics brought that in, the sort of more personal spiritual side of it, but for most of the Old Testament, except, you know, the Essenes and some of the Pharisees, it wasn't about that. It was just about the nation and keeping it together and keeping it continent and not intermarrying and all this stuff. That was the whole thrust of it, right? And keeping our ways and just coming apart. You know, even the word secret means set apart. It means we're not like those other people, you know, so.
Right, and I'm not going to disagree with you. A lot of the Old Testament was apartheid.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wouldn't say that. I would just say nationalism. Simply, there may have been.
Well,
that.
If you break it down, I mean, if you really break it down, I mean, it's your clan, the chosen people, and all this. I mean, it's. Apartheid.
Well, I think apartheid specifically means where you have two groups that are separate, whereas this is a little simpler, I think. It's simply, it's racially oriented, but it's, I can't say either way. I don't know enough about what that term. I just know the term in reference to South Africa, where it basically means the same thing as segregation.
Right. Well, if you look at what's happening in Israel right now, it's apartheid. It's total segregation.
Israel today, it is. I just don't know that in antiquity. I'm sure that type of system probably existed in certain parts, but I don't think that's the idea the Bible promotes. Apartheid was sort of an accident of colonizing, right? Just like in South Africa, same thing in the Middle East. Colonizing. I mean, let's face it. Israel was, first of all, Hitler was a Zionist agent. And Israel was a German, basically a German, a Nazi German colony, an outpost of the Nazis that Jews settled so that they could get rid of the English and get some trade going on. I mean, that was the whole point. And the racism was just a pretext. I mean, it was part of Theodor Herzl's whole plan to implement, you know, to instigate racism, anti-Semitism, racism against Jews. That's how he meant the term, I guess, in order to create this. So, but in his defense, Herzl had no intention of settling in the Middle East because he wasn't religious, but that's a long story. But anyway, I think apartheid or segregation, which I don't know the difference, if there's a difference at all between those two, but it's kind of an accident of when you're colonizing. And of course, they're pretending like, oh, we're, you know, they're making believe. They're pretending, oh, we're Israel, but you know it's not true, and the fact that it takes the form of apartheid really shows the world that that's not true in a very easily accessible thing. So that's why I think Jimmy Carter knew what he was doing when he wrote that book, you know, Israel Peace, Not Apartheid, about a year ago, published that, because he knew this was maybe the key to helping people realize and snap out of this trance we're in vis-a-vis Israel, and realize that, no, this is nothing like this pseudo-theological claptrap we've been sold by the Zionists and by the Scofield Bible, et cetera.
Great. Well, the thing that bothers me about it is all the money and support that we give Israel.
That would be another key to waking people up. Absolutely.
Right. I mean, come on, over 30,000 a year for man, every man, woman, and child in Israel. Really? Mm-hmm.
That really, and that's without
that,
counting
that's,
the.
That's probably pretty close to the median income across the United States.
Yeah, it's welfare. Well, foreign aid in general, foreign aid as an institution is basically global Marxism. But the fact that Israel gets a third of our foreign aid budget when they're the 33rd richest nation, there, you know, not even Marx would have envisioned that sort of, you know, corrupt element, because there's no reason for it. There's nothing to justify it. And that's without even counting all the military aid and the actual arms. Do you realize we have a base over there where we rent the land from Israel and we pay them to defend them? Do you understand? This is insane. And they don't help us one lick. I mean, they don't help us at all. This is a madness. This is a fervor. It started with the Parashim Society. There was the Scofield Bible published in 1909. I created a booklet, and I'll send you the link or a pamphlet. The Scofield Society, because I consolidated a lot of this concisely. I condensed it a lot. The Scofield, and then in 1911 was the Parashim Society. First was observed in the top or in some of the better colleges in the United States. And so it's been inculcated. It's not only is it these churches preaching this false gospel of Scofield, but it's also the elite. I mean, there's at least two separate parts to this whole movement as it was sort of forcibly injected into the American culture. It was injected into the Bible people at the bottom, so to speak. I'm sorry, but they tend to be. And and the educated people at the top.
Well, that's something I didn't even list in my bullet points, but the influence and the insane psychology of warfare and man-created religion.
Right.
I mean, that would take you back to, like, warfare, like the Crusades.
Mm-hmm.
If you really think about it. And I mean, if this is all intertwined, and the psychology with the psychology of government and religion, and this nationalism and this patriotism.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's funny how this is all intertwined in the psychology of warfare.
Yeah.
So
to get a handle on all of this, and I hate to sound, it's almost elitist, but it's actually not once you understand it. To get a handle on this, you really have to come to grips with anarchy. You really have to, and that's in order to be in any way spiritual. I mean, in order to really have a higher viewpoint on all of this, where you can really see it all at once in one glance, and really see the forest, not just the trees. I really think that's what human mind is missing. And like you were talking about the psychology of nationalism and warmongering, I mean, that's the thing. If we just unplugged from that, just for a moment, we'd have this glimpse of everything. We'd see everything, and we'd realize what we become versus what we truly are, and we'd weep. Because it's so emotionally devastating to see the how the mighty have fallen, so to speak. You know, how we were given so much. I have said ye are gods. And yet, you know, like Jesus said, quoting Isaiah. And it's just like, we are, there's so much more inside us, and we've been trained and conditioned to ignore or even to hate that divinity within us and to project it onto the state. And that's what it is. It's all projection. Everything we think is so good about the state, or frankly anything outside of ourselves, all of it exists. It's a mirror of what's within ourselves, but we refuse to go there, to go into gnosis or self-knowledge, and to truly understand that actually this is all projection, and it's basically being confirmed by science now in the biocentric universe theory, that for all we know, we really are actually making this whole thing up. And it really, of course, harkens back to Hindu philosophy, too. This is all just a game I'm playing with myself, so to speak, this whole life, this whole world. And, I mean, yeah, that's pretty deep, and for some people, they're not ready for that, or maybe they've been poisoned against it by their pastor somehow, by certain machinations that they love to use, just poisoning people and toxic. But I think that's pretty cool. And that's clearly present. Well, Alan Watts talks about that. I won't say too much more about it, but I think it's worth exploring if you can sort of wrap your mind around it, which your mind already is around it because, of course, you've already, in theory, the whole thing is all made up anyway. But
well, yeah, that we could, I've done shows on that before too, but the whole thing that this whole psychology of warfare and it. I mean, the nationalism and patriotism are the key pegs in that, because it gets that herd mentality, that collectivism, that we, instead of me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's compliance too. And I was having I was debating too, and I still say this: the order followers are the most complicit. You know, people say, like, well, this general ordered us to bomb this area.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you didn't follow the orders and physically drop the bombs, it's that chain of command, and it's kind of like police. It's this indoctrination of the soldiers. Well, I'm not doing that. I'm my country's doing that to fight for your freedom.
Hierarchy relies on compartmentalization, and of course that is a mental illness. This
it truly is.
There's an example, of course, in Scripture where the centurion, I believe it was, sick, basically comes to Jesus, and he says to Jesus, "Look, I know you're busy. I follow orders and I give orders, right?" And he's having this awareness of the sort of dynamic in which his life exists. And it doesn't comment much about it, but he just basically, Jesus is seeing the wisdom of this centurion, sort of waking up to how his whole life is just inside this little box of the Pax Romana, you know, the Roman social structure.
Right.
And we still live under that today for all intents and purposes. And it's so petty, it's so small minded. It's like a genie getting stuck into a bottle. It's like, how did we get that tiny minded? That's just amazing.
And it is amazing. And back to the chain of command or the hierarchy. I mean, that you and I, as thinking outside the box as individuals, but the people use that as an excuse for atrocities over and over and over again. Well, I was just following orders. I mean, you know, I had to protect your freedom. I had to go kill a bunch of brown people, including women and children, halfway around the world that would never be a threat to you.
Well,
to protect
your
freedom.
Along with this false virtue of unity, there's this false virtue of obedience, which, again, growing up Catholic, and especially in this cult that I joined that I wanted to ramble about, but obviously there's no time for that, but it's cool. Because I've had a hell of a week dealing with these folks, which just walked into my life, not intentionally, but anyway, it's a whole saga. But, I mean, like, they make this big deal about, it's basically like, if you've ever heard of Opus Dei, it's called the Legion of Christ. They're basically along the same lines as basically the Jesuits, if you will, but it's a newer version of it. And it's like obedience. Like, it's like, dude, I mean, obedience to them is like the crown of all virtues. Like, just do what you're told. That literally, that was like the formation, the training. That was the hallmark of it. Right there. It was just do what you're told.
Right. Well, this is all indoctrinated in us from the very beginning that obedience is somehow a virtue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Blind obedience. It's a virtue.
It's crazy because I wrote a whole piece about, you know, anarchy. I mean, from the beginning, I knew anarchy, A, it's more logical. B, it's more practical. In other words, it's more responsible. Once I stopped just taking orders and doing them unthinkingly, I start taking responsibility. And people who haven't done that don't know. Because what I'm talking about really is a stage of development as a human organism. Okay? Something in you shifts when you start to take responsibility for what you do and for what you think. You suddenly become something you didn't know you were. It's hard to even talk about it. It's like when you discover your genius, and like I found like a passion for research, okay, for an example, and suddenly something snaps, something clicks, I should say, something clicks, and suddenly you're just not the same person because you suddenly realized, my goodness, you know, I found what freedom can mean. Living in liberty. It's so much more than just talking about freedoms. It's just, it's frankly, it's ineffable. It's undescribable.
Right. Well, if you look at Wikipedia, obedience in the human behavior, they state, I mean, this is really on point. This first paragraph, it says obedience in human behavior is a form of social influence in which a person yields to explicit instructions or orders from an authority figure. Obedience is generally distinguished from compliance, which is behavior influenced by peers, and from conformity, which is behavior intended to match that of the majority. Obedience can be seen as immoral, amoral, and moral. Compliance, conformity, and obedience, you can really intertwine them, though, if you really think about it. I mean, compliance is getting along influenced by peers and conforming.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're obedient, you're yielding to explicit instructions or orders from what you perceive to be an authority figure.
Interesting. Now, being autistic, I don't think I ever had the conformity problem, but I think that I tried to overcompensate by finding authorities to be obedient to, and until I realized that was nuts. But for my early years, formative years.
Right, and I mean you can get into obedience which I've done shows on and discussed many times is the study of the Stanley Milgram experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, that involves deception of the participants. They were told they were going to contribute to a study about punishment and learning, but the actual focus on it is how long they would listen to and obey orders from the experimenter. You know, where they had to shock someone for every wrong answer in a learning task, and the shocks increased with intensity for each wrong answer. If the participants questioned the procedure, the researcher would encourage them further. The dependent variable for this experiment was the voltage of the shocks administered.
And it kind of makes me think that's so telling. A lot of people want to believe, oh, we're basically good deep down inside. And that's what a lot of people are more comfortable thinking. But, of course, this reveals something altogether different. This reveals that we are highly suggestible, highly easy to manipulate. We can be just like a flock of sheep if we're not being mindful.
And it's all tied into this herd mentality. And basically, 95% of the population are really pawns in the game and part of this herd mentality. The herd mentality goes under many different false dichotomies, conservative, liberal, socialist, communist. But in reality, the only true free thinker that is broken from the herd mentality would be an individualist anarchist.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I should jump in here and just say something. Personally, I think I've talked about distributism. It's kind of a middle way between individualism versus communism, right? Or capitalism versus communism. It's basically saying that really our focus ought to be the family. And that's basically what distributism is anthropologically. Obviously, primarily it's an economic theory, but of course it also has this sociological side to it too. And so that's kind of what I find to be, and it's perfectly consistent with anarchy. Maybe in my mind, it more so because it's again, it's sort of that other level. It doesn't give in to the right left thing. I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, say it's bad or you should think this way, but I would say to look into it. As Dorothy Day is quoted as saying, we really need to look into this program. So that's sort of where I stand when it comes to individualism versus communism. I would say neither one.
Neither that's nor. Fair enough. let me do this. I'm going to take a quick commercial break for the listeners, and we'll be back in a few minutes. Got to thank our sponsors for helping us out here at Truth Emerges Radio. We'll be right back here on Unraveling the Matrix with myself, Austin Thomas, and John McGuire.
Hi, this is David Bozal, Vice President of Crystal Pure CBD. Have you been trying to get CBD, but you just don't like what's available? Sure, lots of people can get CBD, but most people don't realize it's only 15% CBD and 85% black stuff. Why the black stuff? We don't know either. We'd like to introduce Crystal Pure CBD, made with 99.99% pure cannabidiol. That's pure CBD, just like sugar. We mix it with hemp seed oil and make some of the best stuff on earth. Crystal Pure CBD.
Eastern seaboard. I got my diesel wound up and she's running like I never before.
Hey folks, this is the Mouth, and if you need something moved, you need to go through Dadco Transportation. Family-owned and operated, Dadco Transportation specializes in pad wrap fixtures to retail stores throughout the country, as well as furniture transportation, pad trap and box furniture from California to Arizona to all points east. Be it truckload, LTL, rollout, exclusive use, or expedited, Dadco is here to service their clients safely, efficiently, and quickly. So if you need something moved within the continental U.S., contact Dadco Transportation at 609-296-9121 or contact them directly at dadcotrans.com. That's DABCOTRANS.com.
But I could never make believe it's all right. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight.
Easy money.
Who is getting your money? If you are being hijacked by corruption in your government, you will quickly realize that you are stuck with no way out. Find out how your life, family, and assets can be stolen from you while you are the one paying for it. Join me, Debbie Carroll, at the Fourth Branch, The Truth Emerges, on Blog Talk Radio, Thursday nights from 6 to 8 Pacific Time. We need everyone on board to understand what is happening and put a stop to this evil corruption.
Hi, I'm Steve.
I'm Irene.
I'm Lisa.
My name is Tom.
I'm a graphic designer.
College freshman.
Stay-at-home mom with a full-time job.
Scholar on social policy and a barista.
And I'm just like you.
I'm an Obama supporter.
I support President Obama.
But the president needs your help.
Our president can't launch into another war without you. And remember, when we voted for him in 2008 and 2012, we promised to support him no matter what.
Together, we can do it.
That's why we here at the Americans for Whatever Barack Obama Wants, Did You Know He's Friends with Jay-Z, have launched a Kickstarter campaign to fund World War III.
And America is dead-ass broke, so our goal is to raise $1.6 trillion on behalf of the U.S. government.
That's where you come in.
Even a small donation would make all the difference.
World War III is a very important, very progressive war that Obama tells me is very important. So it must be.
When I first saw the president speak in 2008 in a YouTube clip posted to my Facebook page, I knew he was going to be right all the time. So I support World War III and IV and any moon war the president may want to start.
I mean, there is no way that he or the cabal of corporate interests, spy agencies, and shadow bankers would tell him what to do would ever mislead us.
The $1.6 trillion that we raise will help create a war that truly puts the liberal in neoliberal. There will be millions of troops, thousands of organic grass-fed bombs, hybrid Prius tanks, rockets controlled by iPads, and drones that play the Lumineers while they attack.
World War III is not going to be like those other Republican wars fought on just 1% of the world. This war is going to be fought in 99% of the world.
It'll be everywhere. Russia, China, Africa, Cincinnati, your favorite brunch spot, the one with those kick-ass ranchero breakfast burritos.
Everywhere.
World War III will also be the most social media-focused war ever. It'll be all over Twitter, Facebook, Vine, Pinterest,
and whatever eventually replaces Pinterest. And I mean, just think of all the hilarious gifts we can make of cats reacting to their owners' homes being obliterated.
Lots of shock, but tons of aww.
And come on, guys, how good will Michelle's arms look in sleeveless army fatigues? We have a lot of great rewards for our donors. If you donate $10 to the World War III Project, you'll get a shout out on social media.
Hashtag thank you.
A $25 donation will get you a piece of rubble from a war-torn Middle Eastern country kissed by Senator Lindsey Graham.
A $100 donation gets you a day pass to leave your local refugee camp.
You'll probably end up in a refugee camp, but it'll have free Wi-Fi. And a $10 million donation gets you your own senator for a year.
So please, help us reach our goal of $1.6 trillion so we can make World War III a reality. Why? Because Obama.
Because Obama.
What?
I was pretty big leaving home. I thought I was going to that.
Because you rose at the top here. You gave the thing you need to have to get legal weed.
Legal weed. I can see where you got that from. Yeah.
You're listening to Unraveling the Matrix with Austin Thomas. Join the second hour by calling 1-347-855-8301.
All right, everybody, back here live on the Insane Psychology of War discussion here on Unraveling the Matrix, Truth Emerges Radio. I got you back live, John. Thanks for sticking around and hanging with me. And Renegade, mm-hmm. I see you there. All you got to do is press one if you want to press the queue and jump in for a little bit. I see you lurking there. Yeah. It's just so crazy to think of all the psychology used. I mean, you know, we're talking about nationalism, patriotism, and propaganda, the groupthink, and really brainwashing techniques, conformity, order followers, a chain of command, collectivism, compliance, all these things, symbolism, the herd mentality, and this indoctrination that could actually make a soldier kill kids. Just think about that. What is the psychology for a man or a woman to kill kids?
Not to mention actual drugs that they maybe use.
That's true too. I'm sure Big Pharma. I'm sure that they're using some kind of drugs, tying in with their brainwashing and indoctrination techniques. This is what we've come to. I mean that a soldier could just be such a pawn in the game that they would actually kill kids and women and kids, kill them, and think that they are doing something patriotic or nationalistic and protecting something sacred.
I personally know a guy who was a Marine and actually killed this young kid in self-defense because he was carrying explosives. But I can tell you something, he does not feel good about that at all. He only told me one time, and that was in tears. And so they're not all like that. But they definitely use 9/11 to get people out there, to get people signing up. They didn't let that crisis go to waste.
Well, they sure did. This goes into this war on terror. I mean, this war will never end.
Mm-hmm.
there's always going to be a boogeyman to point your fingers to, always something to support the military-industrial complex, always some sort of propaganda and indoctrination. I mean, there's always going to be something there. This war on terror, I mean, not that there's ever a winner in war, but this war can never be won. It never can be won.
Well, it can be won when everyone's dead. And I think that's sort of the goal.
Well, it's exactly the goal. It's exactly the goal. That's,
you know,
the whole goal.
It's not being a conspiracy theorist. It's just being intelligent and thinking a couple moves ahead. I can see where this is going. They keep putting more people on their list.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt the Department of Homeland Security is putting veterans on their watch list. Not just veterans, constitutionalists, if you support a third party candidate, if you speak out against government in any way, if you're a right to lifer, if you believe in the right of a human being born and brought to term. I mean, they're enveloping so many things, and this indoctrination is just mind blowing that people say, well, they under this illusion or this guise of security. Well, I mean, the Department of Homeland Security, I mean, most people, they must know what they're doing. I mean, so I guess they're watching these people. Maybe I should watch them too. Or maybe instead of me thinking along those lines, I better conform and comply and be part of the herd mentality. I mean, I got to follow orders. I mean, it's for national security. It's the psychology of nationalism and patriotism.
Mm-hmm.
All these tools that they use. And again, I mean, and I'm not defending, you know, a kid that carries a bomb or you know, but I mean, think about it. What the heck would you do if China came into your backyard? And what do you think your kids would think if China came into your backyard and watched your mom and dad killed by Chinese? What the heck do you think you would do as a kid?
Be a terrorist.
You damn right, I'd be a terrorist. I mean, of course. And that this whole war on terror is a vicious circle, because all we're really doing is creating more terrorists.
It's a war on
for
humanity.
Every so-called terrorist that we kill, we're creating two or three more.
This is what fascist Spain under Franco was doing to the Muslims there. It's a mindset of kill them all. But they don't want to say it that way, so they just say, well, they might kill us. That's why we're going to kill them all.
I mean, this came to Donald Trump, who is going to be your Republican nominee for president of the United States, actually came out and said, this is the propaganda and this brainwashing techniques. He was saying, not only do we have to kill the terrorists, we need to kill their mothers and children also.
Wow, way to go, Donald Trump.
Like that.
I'm glad that Ron Paul has repudiated him, in spite of Alex Jones's pleading that was really, I woke up to that this morning and I was like, yes. And it really helped me though, because I was sort of, I was still leaning toward Trump, but when I heard Ron Paul say what he said, I said, no, there's no way.
Right. This whole thing too, that Donald Trump is his own man and he's funding his own campaign. You heard about Edelson. The premier Zionist here in the United States is contributing $100 million to his campaign.
Yep, it's open market on the government, as always. Business as usual.
It is business as usual, and I look at all these so-called anarchists and libertarians that are getting sucked in this Donald Trump thing. I mean, like Stephen Molyneux supporting Trump, Christopher Cantwell supporting Trump, Alex Jones supporting Trump. And someone that I held in high regard, but this is in my craw, is Christopher Green from AMTV. He supports Trump too. Why are all these anarchists / libertarians? Why are they all supporting Trump? I don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it.
Well, because politics isn't about principles. It's about politics.
That is true. It is about the politics.
And again, humanity has long outgrown this, but we need to fire these people. We need to say, Donald Trump, you're fired. Hey, wouldn't that be something?
Yeah.
But I mean, only.
Well, we need to fire them all.
Yeah, exactly.
And I got Renegade with his hand up. We're going to bring the Renegade in. Mr. Renegade Smith.
Hey, guys. What's going on? What's everybody doing tonight?
Doing all right. Just I'm going to cut the show off in about 13 minutes, grab a little bite to eat, and actually going to go see Joan Jett and the Blackhearts for free in downtown Fremont Street tonight.
Oh, that's cool. She's still rocking after all these years. That's crazy.
She's awesome. I still love that girl. I love her to death. She's just awesome.
It's a new music.
Well, I mean... You know, I grew up on this stuff. What am I gonna say? I mean, she's just awesome,
right.
And she's still rocking it. But what do you think? You've been listening a little bit, Renegade. What do you think about our little discussion here on the psychology of war, the insane psychology of war?
Well, war is evil. We know that. You know, there's many wars going on. There's a war against our minds, our lives, our health. You know, we have people such as Big Pharma threatening us every day. We have, you know, the geoengineering campaign going on, and they're polluting our skies with all sorts of crap. It's getting all over everything. And, you know, in psychology, that word you used, I had 2 hours of sleep, by the way, I've spent.
That's all right.
You know, when it comes down to it, the effect that it has on us mentally, you know, through their propaganda, they always try to make all these attacks look like it's a good thing. Always.
Right.
Even our wars overseas, these aren't even wars. These are invasions. It's an absolute invasion. They're not spreading freedom in any way, shape, or form. They are spreading the long arm of the empire. And people fall for this crap. They really believe that there's terrorists out there. Another name coined by them. Them
right.
Being the real terrorists.
Yeah, and the war on terror. I mean it's such hypocrisy. We go in there and terrorize these other countries to fight the war on terror.
It's as bad as the war on drugs. It's a war on us.
Yeah,
that's a joke.
Yeah, we fight a war on drugs so the CIA can corner the black market and so Big Pharma can corner the so-called legal market.
Oh, plus it's a great way for them to swindle money to black projects. You know, yeah, we need this much money. You don't have a budget for the war on drugs, and once it goes in there, it gets distributed out to all sorts of other stuff. That's a fact.
Well, yeah, that is a fact of covert operations. I mean, look, this all ties into. I mean, this came out in the open with Iran-Contra,
right?
Running drugs and running weapons.
Good old Ollie North. Good old
Ollie
North. You know what? That's just one thing that got thrown out in the open. Can you imagine how much stuff is going on that hasn't been found out yet?
Of course. Of course. But remember, it's all in the name of national security.
What a joke. There is no security. You can't have security and freedom. You can't. You can't. The both cannot dwell together. Because when you have a whole bunch of security, you lose your freedom. Look at a prison. Maximum security. How much freedom do you have in a maximum security prison? None.
Right.
And that's a farce right there.
I mean, this ties into something that I actually made it today's edition of Status Gonna State. This Thomas Rambo, he's a minarchist. He says, but government and police don't prevent crime. And he said, neither would an ANCAP society. And I responded, nothing can prevent crime. Some people are going to steal, rape, and murder, regardless of repercussions. I mean, there's just bad people out there. There is bad people out there. That a war on terror, this war on terror that we're fighting, I'm loosely saying we, that our government is funding and fighting, is creating more terror than it's stopping.
Oh, absolutely. It's not that it's – I hate the word terrorist. The only terrorists out there are the federal government and these black project groups and these oligarchs. They're the terrorists. They feel like they own the world and they can just do whatever they want. You know, people sticking up for themselves or being wrongly accused or wanting to do something about the empire are not terrorists. They're just sick and tired. These people are fed up. Is there a name for them?
Mm-hmm.
The resistance?
Well, it was like John and I were discussing earlier. I mean, if China came and invaded you and your kids saw some Chinese guys that invaded your backyard kill you and your wife, what do you think your kids are going to become?
Oh, they're going to become basically, what would be a good word I'm looking for here, berserkers. They're going to go nuts on it. And, yeah, they're going to aim all their attention at that government or at that empire.
Right.
Absolutely.
They're
going to
be what we term terrorists.
Mm-hmm. Right. I hate that term. I'm telling you, I don't even use it. You mentioned it earlier, there's bad people out there. I'll tell you what, there's some bad drivers out here right now. I literally just watched a person go way far left of a driveway and started driving straight into someone's front yard and had hit the brakes. They thought it was the driveway. They missed the driveway by like 10 feet. And then he hits the brakes and you see him trying to back up. Like, really? Oh, man. I got to get off the road.
I feel you.
Jeff Harlan, he says Israeli murderers are called commandos and Arab commandos are called terrorists.
What they're doing is breeding hate. They're breeding hate is what they're doing. Hate towards what's saddening. It's really sad is that these people, you know, I know people from that came here from overseas, and I have also met people on Facebook. And it's not that they all hate us, but they stay, man, how can I say this right? They see how spoiled Americans are.
and they see how so many Americans back the illegal activity of the federal government, and they can't stand that. It's not that they hate all of us, all of we the people. They definitely don't like the government. They definitely don't like, you know, the empire. But, mm-hmm. you know, these patriots and these crazy just right-wing, left-wing, whatever, people are just blind the sheeple. You can be a left-winger or a right-winger. You're still a sheeple. You're a sheep. It don't matter. You call yourself a conservative or a liberal. You're a freaking sheep. You're a sheep.
And when the political class tell us that they hate us, what they mean is they hate them, and they're going to hide behind us. We're their human shield is what we are.
Yes, very good point. Very good point.
We got to stop it.
Yeah, we have to stop this war and warfare, like Renegade put it so succinctly, on our minds. It's all this indoctrination. It's all this they use these I love these buzzwords: national security, war on terror, follow the chain of command. I mean, it's a groupthink. Conformity and compliance are traits that they deem like good.
Yep.
What is so good about conforming and being compliant and following orders of these freaks that have this illusion of authority?
Yeah. From where we are, it's the opposite side of the entire universe, right?
Right. Right. What is good about blindly following orders? What is good about doing as you're told? Because when you're an order follower, and Mark Passio put it so well, when you're blindly following orders, you're not using conscious thought. You're acting as a robot.
What drives it, I think, is insecurity and the fact that they've never experienced that breakthrough, like I was saying, that stage of development where you act freely, and that's what raises, like you say, your consciousness to where you're able to take responsibility for what you do. And you can never go back, by the way. Not really. Not without some crazy head trauma. You can never go back from that. And that's where we have to help people to arrive to that point of no return.
Right. Well, unless you're this Kyle Wagner who claims he was an ANCAP and now he's a statist, went back to statism.
That flies in the face of everything developmental psychology has to say, but okay.
Right. I think he's just really trolling. He is the only person that I have ever talked to that claimed they were an anarchist and went back to statism.
Yeah, same here.
I've never heard of anyone else. Once they crossed that great divide and saw authority, this illusion of authority, for what it is, it's bogus, and saw these institutions and this government that they do all these mystical voodoo rituals, and they make these laws that they never follow, but they expect you to follow.
Well, I mean, here, maybe this is an interesting take on it. Maybe this could redeem it. Is that his path? I'm just going to play along and pretend this is legit and he's not an agent. Wow, your path is so unique. You know, you're so unique. Do you realize that what you've done is so individualistic in going from anarchy to statism? You know. You should really think about how unique and special that makes you.
Having like these terms explained to me, because there's a lot of titles when it comes to anarchy. You know, it seems to be a title for every freaking thing. But But, you know, I used to be a conservative Republican, and then I quickly
turned
my back to that. Yeah, and I quickly, once I figured it out, and I saw that, you know, this is a two-headed snake, or, you know, the same coin, so to say, I quickly said, I'm done. I haven't voted in years. I have no will to vote. This system's corrupt. I want no parts of it. I don't want to be, you know, George Carlin put it very well. My listeners, go check out his some of his things on voting. George Carlin on voting. Listen to what he has to say, because I totally agree. You can't blame me. I didn't vote, but I can blame you.
Right.
Even though your votes don't count. But you're listening to all these terms of definitions of an anarchist. I could say I'm a minarchist, even though I think it is such a wimpy term. Minarchist. Mm-hmm. Sounds wimpy, like mini. But yeah,
I'm gonna break it down for you, Renegade, and then I'm gonna wrap up the show. Anarchy is derived from an ancient Greek word called anarchos, and is without, archos is a ruler. Simple.
Yeah.
And what happens is you have a simple, and it's really an ideology. It's not a political thing. It's just you realize that I'm without a ruler.
Well, I do have a ruler. He's the Almighty. He's the creator of all. You know what I mean? He's my ruler. I don't need another man ruling over me. Matter of fact, I've been writing a song that mentions that. I know you're going to love the song. It's a real chill acoustic song I've been working on here for a little while. But that's the first thing I say. I don't need another man ruling over me.
Right.
That's basically anarchy.
Well, that's really what it's about. I mean, but in a way... In anarchy, I mean, break it down, the word etymology, without rulers. But in reality, it, like John and I were discussing earlier, it's kind of an oxymoron because you actually rule yourself.
True. Well, you know, and I've always been a leader. I have always been a leader. I've never been a follower. And when other people don't want to step up, I step up. You know, they'd ask for volunteers, and you know, everyone's kind of like looking at each other. I'm like, I'll do it. What do I got to do? Jump through that fire? Okay, no problem. What do I got to get? Some hot coal and bring it back to you? I got you. You know? I'm not afraid to be the example. And I we've discussed this many times, how anarchists don't like someone, you know,
like that term leader. I mean, authority, but in a way, like if you're an authority on building a house, I'm going to follow your lead, but I'm you know, as long as you don't start ordering me what to do, I mean, I'm going to work with you, but I mean, if you don't mandate actual orders against me, we're going to be cool, but I'm going to follow your authority. I mean,
you need authority in a household. You have authority over your children, but it's for good reason, because you care about them and you love them. And, you know, it's not that, you know, it's my way or the highway. You know, you always got to try to, you know, meet your, I mean, yeah, to some things you cannot meet dead center on. And, you know, we were all kids once, so we've got to keep that in mind. But, you know, when it comes down to it, you kind of are the authority in your home, especially as a father. But it's not like a dictatorship or anything like that. You know what I mean? You know what I'm trying to say? It's authority is good. It's not that I'm taking away their rights or freedoms or anything like that. I'm protecting them. That's what a parent is doing. They're protecting those rights and freedoms. You know, they're protecting, you know, the right to life. You know, kids do some dumb things, but they don't know what they're doing a lot of times. You know, they do things without thinking. I've told my kids that many times. You know, that's my role. When you lack thinking, I have to step in. I've been down these roads.
I think that the parental authority in the family is really the only authority that's legitimate, probably ultimately, and that's why rulers are always calling themselves the fathers of nations, because really they know that they have to use that terminology to borrow legitimacy from it for their obviously less than lofty agenda.
Good point.
I want to also say that I think what happens is, on a psychological level, as you let go of external hierarchies, and when you're an adult, you don't need, obviously, a parent. When you let go of external hierarchies, then you begin to understand internal hierarchy of your own faculties, and that is when consciousness, you can make that choice to make consciousness the ruler. So that's, I mean, insofar as there is a ruler, that would be it.
Right. You know, I love the one verse in the Bible. So I think it was some. Go ahead, Austin. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I'm gonna let you finish with that, and then I'm gonna wrap it up here.
Okay. Yeah, there's a verse. I remember reading this. I am reading the Bible. I read it. Try to read it every night, amongst other books. Like I'm reading the Bilderberg Group book, and anyway. Back in the ancient, you know, ancient times, the Israelites all of a sudden, no, I didn't say the Jews, I said the Israelites, they felt they needed to have a king. And God, speaking
correct,
through his people, said, you do not need a king. I'm looking out for you. You know, this is what's going to happen when you have a king. And he goes off and rattles a whole bunch of things. That's exactly what you see in society today. And honestly, that was pretty much the start of it all. I mean, people needing to have a king, someone ruling over them. So, of course, he appointed David. And, you know, wow, what's wrong with people? You know, it's like, why do you need, you know, looking at some of these kids today, like, why do you need to have a role model? Like, you really need to, you know, design your life after someone else, especially the Hollywood crowd. Like, you want to be like Kanye West? You want to be like Kim Kardashian? What? What's wrong with you? Be yourself. Be your own individual. You know, everyone is created with a uniqueness. You got to tap into that uniqueness and not try to be like someone else, and not definitely not look for a ruler. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So looking at the whole thing, like I said, I would probably be based as a minarchist because I do feel we need a little bit of rules and regulations for people to kind of live by, because we know there's some crazies out there. But I'm talking very minimal, very little bit. That's it.
All right. And on that note, I'm going to wrap it up. Thanks to the Renegade for calling in. Thanks for calling in, John. Thanks to listeners. I'm bugging out a few minutes early today. I'm going to get ready, get me a little bite to eat, and go to see Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. Tune in tomorrow is Monday. Tune in for Liberty Logic, and we'll talk to you guys tomorrow, 6 p.m. Pacific. Till then. Oh, no, tomorrow. Oh, geez.
Tomorrow, Sunday.
Oh, tomorrow, Sunday. Right. I'm losing my mind. Strike that. Tomorrow is Sunday.
That's why I'm not doing my share of Renegades Roundtable tonight, because I was going to go on immediately after you at 11, but I can't. My head ain't in the game right now. I'm freaking beat. You know, I went into work. I got into work an hour and a half early, and I'm looking. I got there at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, what am I doing? I should still be in bed. I misread my clock.
Right.
I woke up. I went to bed at like 12. I woke up at 2:30. I woke up at 2:30 in the morning and got dressed and went to work. And I'm listening to the news radio here. And they're like, they go, KYW News time, 3 o'clock. And I'm like, what? What did they just say? And I happened to look down at my stereo, and it's got the time on it. It said 3:05. I'm like, What? Are you kidding me? So, you know, do the math. I got to bed a little after 12. I got up at 2:30 in the morning. Not a good thing.
All right,
I'm
guys.
Deep.
All right, get some rest. And thanks for calling in, John. It was always enlightening talking to you. Thanks to listeners. I'm going to throw it out there. Peace out. I'm out. I got to go eat and go see some
Joe.
Be
safe.
All right, be safe. We're out.